Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
I want a BLT. I want a BLT. I want a BLT.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It does something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It creates like. I love it. Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Nevermind the Music.
Hey, do you remember that song Everybody Talks by Neon Trees?
Yeah, of course. I love that song.
I can hear the chit chat. Take me to your love shack. Mama's always got a backtrack when everybody talks, babe.
Hey. What other songs do you know by Neon Trees?
By Neon Trees? I think the song Animal I've heard before, and that was a pretty popular song.
Yeah. And this one.
And this one.
Yeah. So Neon Trees, are they a two-hit wonder then? Is that a thing we can say?
I think we can say whatever we want. I've never heard that expression before, a two-hit wonder.
Feels like you've got one-hit wonders, and then you've got just wonders, bands. I guess, with with artists, with songs. But this band feels like they really have two. I only knew two of their songs before I dug in a little bit, and they've got, I guess, technically one more. So Animal, 2010.
Sure.
That's their first hit. Reached 13 on the Billboard Hot 100. This song, Everybody Talks, 2011, number 6. They also have one called Sleeping with a Friend in 2014, which hit 51, which kind of is a hit, but not nearly as big.
I've never heard of Sleeping with a Friend.
I have heard some of their other songs, and I like everything I've heard from them. So I'm not trying to downplay it or whatever, but it does seem kind of weird and also rare. Can you think of any other two-hit wonders?
I'm really trying to think. I can't think of any. You definitely see like the one-hit wonder song of the summer bands, and then you never hear from them again. Or you see people that put out like one really good album and then their sophomore album just falls short and then you never listen to them again. But I can't really think of anything specifically.
Well, this is wild also because the two hits, if we're saying Animal and Everybody Talks are their two hits, they come from different albums. So they have, and they had some hits that were on rock radio, like minor hits on rock radio. But in terms of like mainstream exposure, they hit once. And then again, the next year with a different album. That feels super hard to do. When I think of most bands that don't follow up their hit, it's because that next album tanks or it never releases because they break up in disgrace, right?
Or it's like, you know, Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill was like a blockbuster album, but and she's released many albums after that, but you know, you're not hearing about that.
Yeah, she, of course, had more than one hit on Jagged Little Pill.
It's like
but yeah, like
all-star.
A huge album and then follow-ups, not necessarily as hits. So I found a few But I think this is like the proof of how rare the two hit wonders are.
What do you have?
Do you remember Temple of the Dog?
No.
Oh, so you weren't a fan of grunge in the early 90s. So Temple of the Dog is the sort of retroactive supergroup with half of Soundgarden and half of Pearl Jam.
Okay.
Chris Cornell on vocals with Eddie Vedder singing harmonies.
That sounds awesome.
Do you remember that song? I'm Gone Hungry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Gone Hungry.
That's Temple of the Dog.
Good for them.
Hunger Strike. And then they have the song Say Hello to Heaven.
Oh, I don't know that
one. Okay, that's a good one. So those are their two hits, and that's it. But they kind of don't count because they only had one album that was a tribute to their friend who had died.
What friend, but do you know?
The lead singer of Mother Love Bone.
It
was a tribute to the vocalist of Mother Love Bone, who apparently was the roommate of, I think, Chris Cornell at the time. But The Left Bank, also in the 60s, they had that song, Don't Walk Away, Renee. Walk Away, Renee.
Just walk away.
And Pretty Ballerina.
I asked her for this dance and then she obliged me. Was I surprised? Yeah. Was I surprised? No, not at all.
Yeah, you
never
don't know
heard
him?
It, but I love hearing you sing it.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I didn't know you were going to get that today, folks.
Really enjoyed it.
Left Bank are sort of like Baroque pop. Like classically, it's like, think of the Paul McCartney pieces of Sgt. Pepper's and a whole band of that.
Sure.
With like oboes and stuff like that. And then another bad creation, more early 90s kid hip hop. You don't know ABC? Cooling at the Playground?
No. Yeah.
Novelty act. Two hits. Aisha. And Playground.
I swing my beat at the playground. You know, come on, y'all.
Oh, Aisha.
They had Boys to Men singing backup harmony. I mean, the music is like very well produced, New Jack Swing.
Sure.
I was super into it when I was a kid.
I loved Aisha when I was a kid. I didn't realize they were the band. I mean,
two hits.
How do we know?
Band is possibly not.
They were a fabrication.
But they were kids who were rapping and singing, so.
I did a talent show in fifth grade, and we sang Aisha. We lip-synced it in front of the whole school. It was pretty boss.
As one does.
I mean, that's what we did in the 90s, folks. That's what it was like.
So, yeah, there are a few two-hit wonders, but I think there is something about it. If you survive that first album, then you're going to get maybe another hit on some level, right? So, like, The Left Bank, Temple of the Dog, ABC, all of those hits come from the same record. But here we are with Neon Trees. They hit on two. Anyways. I want to talk about Everybody Talks. This comes from their 2011 album, Picture Show. Definitely their biggest hit. And it seems to be about gossip and rumors.
I've been obsessed with these lyrics.
All right, talk about, because I got a lot I want to talk about musically, but we have to talk about the topic of this song.
Yeah, right. I mean, on the surface, it's a song about like gossip and rumors. But then you dig into the lyrics and there's like a lot of innuendo about like definitely secrecy. You can feel like a strong tension building inside this human that's singing the song. 100%.
What is this song about?
The way I interpret this song, when I first read it, it was about like him making up with a girl in the closet. But then when I learned more about the singer, I learned more about his personal history. Do you know stuff about his personal history?
Well, I know that he grew up in the Mormon church.
Yeah, he grew up in the LDS, the Mormon church.
But he's also gay.
Yes, he grew up in the LDS church. He's a gay man. He was closeted when he wrote the song.
Which is just such a difference when you think about like rock bands having hits in the 2010s to still be closeted. But it's related, of course, to that church upbringing. And I assume many of the other folks in the band are still practitioners of LDS.
Yeah, I think that they are. I know that he, spoiler, left the band. And did his own solo album Do you know what the solo album's called?
No.
It's called Excommunication.
Oh, wow.
And it references his excommunication from the LDS church. And then also he frames it as like communication with his ex-boyfriend, like things he wanted to say his ex-boyfriend. So it's a double meaning. And the tracks on that album are like, the titles are wild. Do you want to hear?
Yeah, tell me.
So Gods and Monsters is a track on that album. Shameless, Give 'em Hell, Devil, Sudden Death.
Okay,
trash.
Wow.
It's loaded.
Okay, so Everybody Talks. Is it about the rumors that he is gay? Because it does seem like there's a girl in the song. So what's the plot here?
My interpretation is that the plot of this song is him trying to convince people that he's straight. And
by
trying to spread,
hooking up with a girl.
Yes, and like spreading rumors to get people around him like kind of gossiping and chattering that he's straight and hooking up with a girl, just to kind of mask.
The main reason I wanted to talk about this song, it's not just the two-hit wonder thing. There's something about the way they handle tension and an explosion of energy. So you remember when I play that hook, the big chorus of this song, it's loud, it's bombastic. Mm-hmm. There's something explosive about it. What I want to talk about is musically, they've embodied this tension. Tyler Glenn's crafting of the lyrics seems to fit this moment of tension and then in some ways resolution, though it sounds like he didn't get the resolution until he made that solo album.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, take a listen to the verse section leading into the chorus. In some songs, we would have a whole section called the pre-chorus. You've probably heard me talk about that already. But the pre-chorus is often like something that makes you really want the chorus. This doesn't have a full pre-chorus. It's just kind of more like the end of the verse does something. And I wanted to talk about that does something.
I'm a savage sucker and this happens all the time. I find out that everybody talks. It started with a whisper.
It's so good.
Yeah. So that chorus is huge, right?
Yeah.
Verse, less so.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
I'm counting four things that they do that really amplify that. Honestly, I sort of heard a fifth, fourth, fifth right there. And
nerd
it was just,
alert.
They added that. Yeah, nerd alert. They just added that extra little guitar. So I'm going to just put out, this is reason number 0.5.
I find out that everybody talks. It started with the whiz.
So I'm adding reason 0.5 is that bum, that guitar chord that's added. But everything else they're doing in this one line, I find out everybody talks, that they're amplifying our tension and our desire for some kind of resolution. You ready to get a little baby's first music theory class with me?
I'm so into it.
All right. This song is in the key of E flat.
E flat.
E flat.
Not common for a pop song.
Well, as someone who sometimes plays in bands with horn players, it's super common if you've got horn players.
Sure.
But on the guitar, E flat, kind of the stupidest key.
Flats in E flat.
Four flats in E flat.
Is that
you
right?
You are incorrect.
Okay. Close.
There are three flats in E flat. So what you're getting at is when I say a song is in a key, it means it's got a certain set of notes. So if I say a song is in E flat, it means E flat, the note.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, listeners, that's a note.
Mm-hmm.
E flat is super important. And there's a few other notes that go along with it. So if you wanted to say, hey, what are the notes in E flat? I would play something called a scale in E flat. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
heard
a
that
bit.
Before? Yeah.
Poppy.
Yeah. The hit single, E flat major. What I want to focus on is the fourth note.
It sounds literally flat.
Okay, well, it is flat. It's an A flat.
Yes.
But you'd have to have perfect pitch to know that or be you.
Maybe I
former
do.
Former flautist,
maybe
Nicole.
Maybe I do.
Listen to that note again. Does that note sound done? It's not really satisfying to hang out there, is it?
No, it actually makes me very anxious.
This is the note. It makes you anxious to not finish it.
Yeah.
This is the note that we have on the Everybody Talks. So listen, this is what we want to hear. ah, you want it to resolve to a different note. But listen to our friend Glenn singing that.
I find out that everybody talks, everybody talks, everybody talks.
Is that four in the scale, the fourth note in the scale. And it is so not done. Normally your scale, you want to end a phrase on the one, the three, or sometimes the five. Those are the stable points in the scale.
And that's for like every key. It's always that fourth note that feels like has that tension.
The fourth note will always have that tension. Whatever key you're in,
cool.
It's not the strongest point of tension, but it will always have that tension. And he's just sitting there.
No, it's like he knows what he's doing.
It's almost like he's a professional songwriter. There's not the only pop song to do that. Here's another one you may have heard.
Nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world.
That's from like a small indie band, right?
Indie band, yeah. The Beatles. Of course, 1969, Across the Universe. Nothing's gonna change my world. That note is the four. Does it sound done? No.
No.
We need nothing's gonna change my world. It has to resolve down. We don't get that at this point in Everybody Talks. It's just tense. All right. We've got a tense note.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a little cool guitar chord added.
That's pretty great.
The other thing that helps make this moment really tense is the chord they're playing. Nicole, you played the flute, right?
I did play
flutes
the flute, yes.
Famously can only play one note at a time. But
famously, known for it.
But internationally renowned.
Yes.
Can you tell me, what is a chord?
I got it.
What do we got?
A chord is like a series of usually three notes, almost always three notes, right? That like make a harmony.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Good. Chord and harmony kind of mean the same thing.
They're synonymous.
Chord's just a bunch of notes playing at once, right?
Cool.
Sometimes three, sometimes four. If you're fancy pants, it could be five or six.
What?
This song in this moment is playing a chord that we would call the five. This is the B flat chord. Remember that scale here?
Yeah.
If you play a chord starting on the fifth note, if you take that note and you build notes above it, you get a chord that's pretty tense. That chord wants to go home. So I'm going to play you the one chord, which is the E flat, and then we go to five and back.
Okay.
And there's a sense of wanting to go home when you hit the five chord.
And when you say home, you mean back to one.
Back to E flat, which is one.
Back to the
and
home
when you hear
chord.
It in the song, you can hear when he says, I find out everybody talks, we have this sort of lean on this chord. That's that five chord.
I find out that everybody talks. It started with the
and then when he hits whisper, back at the E flat chord.
Yeah, I'm really interested in like this idea of the home chord. When you think of what we were just talking about his excommunication from the church and like feeling like he doesn't have family and doesn't have connection to where he grew up, really. And there's a metaphor there. And I know that it probably wasn't his intent in writing the song, but like it's kind of cool to make that connection. Like, he's wanting to go home to a safe place, and now he's like not kind of allowed to be there anymore because of his sexuality. So I just think that's interesting.
Totally. Look, I'm a college music theory teacher. I make my living off of connections that were not intended by the original songwriter. So totally the tension, we can draw connections here and find the metaphor. But the truth is, this is also just everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This musical move is everywhere. Here's Beyonce with Ego.
Yeah, it's like you're waiting for the next thing to happen. Like you're just waiting for the switch to flip.
That awesome part where the horns go bop, 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 bop.
So good.
That's on this same chord. It's in a different key, but it's the tense one that wants to go
home.
Okay,
I'm getting it.
Listen again, listen again.
It's too big, it's too wide, it's too strong, it won't fit, it's too much.
So when you're writing a song, you can use chords to like create tension because we organically want it to go back to this home chord. And if it doesn't, like it kind of gives us this feeling of like we need resolution.
That's right. So this moment, I found out everybody talks. They're on the tense chord and we get the home chord with the screamy huge hook.
Sure.
But when you combine those two things, we've got the cool melody tension and the chord tension. It actually makes the chord even crunchier because that note he was singing, the four, everybody talks, is right next to the five, which makes that, we call that a dissonant part of the chord.
Sure.
It's called the seventh. And so we get actually this even more crunchy chord. And that even wants to resolve even more. But
drag.
I'm not done. Is that all right?
Yeah, more?
I'm not
done.
I love
it. So all the I notes want is tense. More music.
The yes. notes tense.
Yes.
The chord is tense. Also, everybody talks, everybody talks, everybody talks. Mm-hmm. There's something about that repetition that hits really hard and makes you want resolution. What's the difference between me saying, Nicole, what do you want for lunch? And Nicole, what do you want for lunch? What do you want for lunch? What do you want for lunch?
Well, it feels nagging when
feels
you say
it. Feels a little nagging. Stresses you out a
it
little
does.
Bit.
It does. It's like, it feels accusatory almost. Like,
okay.
Gosh, let me think, Mark.
What if it wasn't accusing? What if it was, I want a BLT. I want a BLT. I want a BLT.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It does something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It creates I love
like, it. It creates like a tension. And this is something that songwriters and performers often use. You repeat a line, not just, oh, sing the chorus again. We love it. But repeating the same words in close proximity creates, in this case, like a rhythmic propulsion, but also just an emphasis that's a little anxiety provoking. Here's another example. The Police, Message in a Bottle. You may remember this one.
I've heard of it. You know what? I love Sting. I'm really obsessed with him. This is my least favorite song of theirs because it's so super annoying.
Really?
And it's so annoying to me. I can't even listen to it. It's like, we get it. You want the message in the bottle. We get it.
All right.
And this is probably why.
I love this song. So I'm not going to follow you there, but there is something that repetition, and in this case, maybe going too far for you, but it
for
drives
me.
Home a kind of anxiety in that moment. That crazy thing is, it then dissipates, right?
Sure.
Everybody talks, explodes into a loud, catchy hook. The message in a bottle line is subdued and reggae-y, quiet. All right. So I got one more thing to talk about on this tension point.
Awesome.
Do you know what polymeter means?
Polymeter.
Polymeter.
I can deductively reason.
Do it.
What polymeter? Well, poly means more than one. And meter in music means like a beat. So multiple
yeah,
beats.
Count. Yeah, exactly. Good
yes.
job. Yeah. So meter is like your count, right?
Sure.
So there's the beat, which is just, you know, the rhythm that's going on or the pulse. But the meter is, if you ever heard anybody count off a song, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sure.
Or maybe 1, 2, 3, right? You could have a song in 3, a song in 4. But the awesome part about this is we kind of have two meters happening at once. This is, you know, a good kind of power poppy kind of song in 4. But for a moment, the vocalist is going to bring us into 3. Would you like me to demonstrate?
Yeah, like I don't understand.
I'm going to count first. The four.
Okay.
I'm going to count what the drummer, the guitar player, and the bassist are all doing. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Does that feel natural enough?
Yeah, for like a pop song, for
right.
sure. Yeah.
So that first bar, I'm going to count 4, and then I'm going to switch to 3. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1.
Oh.
Do you hear how everybody talks is 1 and 2 and 3, 1 and 2 and 3, 1 and 2 and 3. He's creating this tension by what we call a brief instance of polymeter. There's 4 in the band,
no.
but he's giving us 3 once again.
I find out that everybody talks, everybody talks, everybody talks. It started with the whiz.
And then we have the classic going back to Little Richard or even earlier stop time in rock and roll where all the instruments cut out.
Yeah.
So this rhythmic tension plus the stop time at the end creates this need for an explosion of energy.
I love it.
You hearing it?
I'm hearing it.
It's cool, right?
So it's really cool.
And this is much less common.
That's hard to do.
It's hard to do, and it doesn't happen as often in pop songs because pop songs often have a dance to it. And that kind of tension is difficult to pull off and still make danceable in this kind of music. It doesn't mean it's not possible, and certainly it happens in a lot of other styles of music. I've got an example for you.
I would love to hear it.
If this is three happening in four, I've got an example that's four happening in three. This is Electric Feel by MGMT.
Oh, I love them.
So what do we got? We've got the main part of the song, the rest of it is in three, and the vocals and the guitars and synths are playing in three. Let me count it. One, two, three. One, two, three. One, two, three. One, two, three. Meanwhile, our friend the drummer playing a four beat.
Working his butt off.
Yeah, working his butt off, keeping a dance beat, like a synth pop four beat. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. And what we're hearing there is the backbeat, right? We Will Rock You, boom, boom, ksh.
And when I've seen this band live before, and they're awesome, and you notice, I'm thinking of like the danceability of it, and maybe it's just the crowd, but like it isn't super danceable. Like, and if we do dance, you do follow the drummer's beat.
You follow
for sure.
The drummer.
Yeah.
Not only is it this loud, intense, intrusive beat, but it's the four beat, which is the like pop dance beat. Yeah. Everybody knows how to dance
to. It's comfortable for us. That's right. Like what we're used
it's comfortable.
To.
You do not have three legs. You have two legs. And so dancing in four and two is just easy.
Huh.
So, all right.
Never thought of it that way.
Let's review. What do we got? We've got
learning a lot.
Tense melody note. We've got a tense chord,
mm-hmm.
especially when you combine it with a melody note. We've got repeating lyrics, and we've got polymeter happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what we get is a really strong moment of tension leading to an explosive chorus.
I find out that everybody talks, everybody talks, everybody talks. It started with the whiz.
So,
yeah.
Does this reinforce the theme of the song? Does this tension serve the tension that he's describing?
I think it does. I mean, I think it's really clear that it does. And I'm wondering, like, when he wrote the song, if he knew what he was doing. And that's information I don't have. Like, I wonder if Tyler Glenn knew it. If he was, like, long conning us as a listener, being like, I'm going to invoke these tension-causing constructs to get my point across, that, or like to nod to the fact that I'm a closeted homosexual in a world that like won't accept me for that. Do you think that he was like masterminding it all?
So I think yes and no. I mean, I can't speak. We'd have to ask him, but hit us up, Tyler, if you're listening, let us know. But I would just say that good songwriting is managing expectations and managing tension.
Yeah.
Right. Remember when I played the five chord going to one? That's been a thing, that need for things to resolve, especially in Western music and modern pop music and things like that. We have tension that resolves to resolution. That's just baked into the drama of a good song. Very few pieces of music are able to be interesting to listen to without any drama. And
well, yeah.
Right before a really catchy, loud chorus hook, tension leading to that is really satisfying. So did he do that and the band do that on purpose? I think certainly yes. Does it metaphorically relate to the tension of this moment? That's harder to answer, but
yeah.
it certainly works when you listen to it knowing that.
And like, right? As someone that knows a lot about psychology, especially like Freudian psychodynamic theory, right? This idea that a lot of our id tendencies and the id... Well, let's start at the beginning. Freud had like this theory of self, like who makes up, how we're made up, right? And we're made up of three parts, our id, our ego, and our superego. Do you know this? Have you heard these words before, Mark?
Id is like your lizard brain, right?
It's the mammalian brain, yeah.
Okay,
for sure.
All right. Was that insulting?
No,
but I mean, like the pure urges. Pure id is like
sure.
A toddler grabbing a toy from another toddler.
Kind of. Like, how I teach it is that, like, if your ego, and it's cool, we just talked about Beyonce's ego. This is using that same word in, like, a different context. Like, ego is the self that you show the world, right? That, like, you're presenting as this unified person. And your superego is, like, you know in old cartoons that there's, like, an angel on your shoulder, like, telling you what to do the right thing? That would be your superego, according to Freud. But we also all have an id, which is kind of like the devil on your shoulder telling you to run the red light, stay out too late, make bad choices, steal the toy from your sister, whatever you're doing, right? And Freud said that we hide our id under the surface. Like, it's mostly subconscious. Not a lot of people are going around, like, wiling out like your id would want you to do. So we push it down, we repress it, and it, like, comes out in different ways. So Freud said that it comes out a lot in dreams and other, like, sort of subconscious exploration. And he built a lot of his clinical practice and psychoanalysis on, like, unrooting the id, investigating it. And you're saying, like, did this guy, Tyler, did he write this song with this intent? Like, maybe he didn't consciously, but subconsciously, it for sure conveys that. It for sure conveys, like, subconscious tension.
Like subconsciously, he went for tension as a way to express. Well, because it's obviously a tense moment that he's describing, but it's just the interesting layer to it is part of that tension is lost on us as the listener if you don't have the full story. And yeah. I think, am I right? At that point, he was closeted at that point.
He revealed he was gay in a 2014 interview in Rolling Stone.
Okay, which is 3 years after this song came out. So he's describing this tense situation that we don't even really understand is tense yet.
He might not even understand it as tense, according to, like, Freudian theory.
Okay, according to Freud.
I think he's
knowingly writing a song about the crazy situation of him feeling like he has to use this experience and maybe on some level use this woman to dispel rumors that he wants to dispel.
Yeah.
And that's a tension that then is weirdly hidden from us. It's just like a, who cares what they say? We're going to go make out in the closet or whatever on your first listen in 2011, if you don't know anything about it personally.
And then he's talking about, like, his lips hurting. He's talking about, like, mama's always got to backtrack. And this, like, the lyrics of the song is definitely, like, people are covering up for him.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's really fascinating. It really, like, this whole context, like, makes me think of the song in a completely different way. And I think that that's really, really cool. So, Mark, you've seen the video for this song, right?
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of Thriller. There's, like, the movie where there's monsters suddenly out of nowhere. And then in real life, there's a monster that's suddenly out of nowhere.
Yeah. He's, like, making out with a girl and she turns into a monster, right?
Which they were totally telling us what this song is about.
Like,
weren't they?
We were blind. We were blind to it until now. So I'll ask you, if you were making out with someone and they turned into a monster, what monster would it have to be to make you run away and, like, run? What would be the scariest moment for you?
The scariest transformation of the lady I'm hooking up with would definitely be a X-Files style alien. Like, if suddenly a little gray proby alien extraterrestrial, that would 100% be the scariest one for me.
You think?
I think. I never was afraid of vampires and zombies or any of that. It was always the aliens, man. It was growing up in that era, I guess. There's the late Cold War anxiety about the skies, I guess.
Really? Oh, I would say zombies.
A zombie.
Sure. Yeah. Fuck zombies.
Never Mind the Music is hosted by me, Mark Poppany, and Nicole Vatcher. I also produce the podcast. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
And let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. And every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we answer your burning questions.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of Season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete Season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear